I'm going to allow public questions or comments to last no longer than a minute. And so if you ask something of the Sea Alaska folks, then we'll give them time to respond, and we'll go that way. And please be polite and courteous.
Decorum.
And do you want me to wait for Rick? Oh, okay. So at this time, I'll take public comments, questions, not to exceed 1 minute. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Ryan Kaufman, and thank you again, Assembly, for your time. As I always thank you, it's a lot of time you put up here. To the Sea Alaska representatives, my question is for you. Right now, of course, historically speaking, Americans have plenty of reason to be skeptical of corporations. Currently, the current status for readout is that the door is locked open to all public users, whether they're shareholders or non-shareholders like myself. What do you envision as being a better situation than the current situation? How is your corporation going to make public lands that are accessible to all better? How will you improve upon the current situation? That's one part of the question. Another part of the question is, like I said, I'm not a shareholder. When I go down to readout to harvest fish that I used to feed myself and the people that I love, I see both shareholders and non-shareholders. Can you tell me yes or no? And I've heard you guys talk around the answer a lot. Can you tell me yes or no? Will I be allowed access, free access as it is currently, to the site that I subsistently harvest fish? So, again, two-part question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Assembly.
Thank you. I guess our focus in seeking ownership of the readout site, at least from a Native and shareholder perspective, you know, we think it's a better situation because there's more Native ownership and control of an important historical site. That being said, I understand that there are concerns about current use by the local community, and our intention is to ensure that there's no difference beyond, you know, from the current use of the site. And we'll do everything within our power to make sure that happens as long as the site is not negatively impacted. But if the level of use is maintained in terms of the use that occurs now and will occur in the future is the same, and it doesn't become a use that is in derogation or harms the property, then I don't see any change occurring, and we'll do everything in our power to make sure that that happens. We will have a deed that applies with the property, the 14H1 deed that will come with the land, and the only other limitation is we have to abide by anything that's in the deed, which could be better or worse for Sitka. We won't know until BLM issues the deed and we see what kind of restrictions or limitations or easements are imposed upon us. But we'll do everything within our power to make sure that that doesn't change.
No,
it's awkward to have this because you guys aren't facing a staff through. But I was also, you know, specifically asking for a yes or no, and so if there's a way that you could do that.
Yes.
Thank you. Perfect.
Hi, I'm Michelle Putz. First, I want to say thank you guys for coming. Thank you guys for having this. We really did need to have it. I'm, you know, like others, I use readout for subsistence fishing, and I sure hope that keeps happening. But I'm going to move on to the Sea Alaska stuff. So I bet if you looked around the room, you would probably see universal support for conveying remaining lands. And I have to say I'm thrilled to hear what you guys are saying tonight, but I really, really wish that this discussion had happened before the legislation was ever put forward. Because what I'm hearing is some creative ideas about sustainability, emphasis on other options for paying for some of the alternative development, And I think if we had had this discussion earlier, it's entirely possible that some other form of legislation could have been brought forward that would have been a lot less divisive. I think that there could have been ways to work with the Forest Service to do some sort of cost-benefit sharing of, let's say, energy sites, where it's not necessarily, set me my 1 minute.
Yep.
I'll do this really quick then. That might have been a way to gain benefit for both the community and Native folks without necessarily conveying different lands, but taking from the lands that were already there, conveying those, but finding a way to find some benefit. So I'm almost hoping that in a way it doesn't go through and that we come up with a different alternative that works better for everybody.
I don't know if that's a question. Anyway, next. That was a good comment. Next, anybody else like to come forward and ask a question, make a comment?
Hello, my name is Richard Williams. I am a Sika tribal member. I am a Shiatica member. I'm a Sea Alaska member. And I'm also a private landowner down in Readout. My family owns 160 acres down there. We are on both sides of the Kazuchia Creek. So any issues that we came here earlier, and we also wanted to know that ancestrally it's Kunaa, but our river is called Kazuchia Creek, but in our language it's called Klekin. So we have the same cultural identity, and we just wanted to make sure that if they're going to be there, we want to be all neighbors. Sika is our home, so we want to be neighbors here. We want to be neighbors with Sea Alaska. So anything that happens to do, where I heard Mr. Esquire talk about the fish in Readout, we are just down 5 minutes away in Kuzuchi Creek with pinks, dogs, and cohos. So we are, our family wants to be partners with everybody here. And so any issue that's going to be brought up as one of the largest, if not the largest landowner in Readout, that we want to be able to support, and we're here to say that we're going to support whoever's going to be a good neighbor. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else care to come forward? No.
Hi, Davey Lubin in Sitka. Okay, first of all, H.R. 1408, the House resolution, lists at least 25 sites in the city and borough of Sitka, not that innocuous map that's back there with just a few little dots. S-730, the Senate bill, companion bill, it could be hundreds. Who knows? They're not even listed. And you mentioned you want to get beyond timber. And I'm wondering, is that why you're choosing 70,000 or so acres of high-class old-growth trees on and around Prince of Wales Island? Let's see. Why was Organized Village of Cake resolved against 1408 and 730? And did Sea Alaska Corporation ask in 1975 to select its lands from the selection areas, the boxes we called them, that currently exist? Why do you want to change that request now? In 2004, the Federal Land Transfer Acceleration Act was passed, and it required you to instruct BLM by 2008, your final land selections. You made those final land selections, and then you instructed BLM to delay conveyance, and that's when this bill emerged. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Are there any questions that you can comment?
Because there were some questions there.
Okay.
We did, in fact, file in 2008 lands that we would ask for conveyance. That included the Craig Municipal Watershed. It included the Setuck River and the Setuck River Corridor. It included a variety of places that have absolutely no business being in our land, but in our ownership. I mean, those are truly public resources, and if the city, I guess I would say, would you support us making a land selection in your watershed? We're trying to be real. We already own the watersheds of Heidelberg, Hoonah, and Cake. We've got enough watersheds. Your community would not support or want us making a land selection if we had such a right in the municipal watershed. That's why we're trying to move these things around. We're trying to make adjustments.
And we were forced to make our final selections by that deadline because of ALTA, but when we submitted those final priority selections, we did say in that letter, here are our priorities if we had to go forward, but we already had a bill in process. So we said, here's what we would select if our bill doesn't go forward, so please don't move on the conveyances until we know what's going to happen with our legislation.
This legislation has been in process for over 15 years. It started out as administrative transactions. I mean, I'm looking at people that, when we started this, they probably weren't able to drive a car yet. I mean, we've been doing this for 15 years. Literally started out as an administrative land exchange. We have Dave Rittenhouse, I think he was actually from Sitka, and others have all been here. And so this transaction has been a very long-term process. So when people say, you know, why don't you do this and why don't you communicate with us? Well, we've communicated, but the people we've communicated with, they've retired, died, or moved on. This legislative process is one that's just struggling. And I started out, I was a young guy when we started this thing. I'm not sure, you know, it's an ongoing battle. But I do want to say, why do we want outside those boxes? Well, because those boxes were defined. We accepted those boxes at the time. But our selection choice without going into those boxes was mountaintops, top of Baranoff, top of Wrangell-St. Elias, which is now Monument Wilderness. Those were the kinds of things that were available for us to select. And so we went back to Congress and said, this is a very good bill. You've recognized Southeast Alaska and they have a native entitlement, but you're giving us the Wrangell-St. Elias. Not the good part about Wrangell-St. Elias, the high part of Wrangell-St. Elias.
Well, just to be clear, in all other regions of the state, basically most of the regions could select from pretty broad areas within their region. Well, in Southeast, we already had Glacier Bay National Park and the Tongass National Forest. And the way ANCSA was written, we could not select within places that were already designated in that fashion as a park or as a forest. So in a way, they had to try to find an exception or a way to get us some land in Southeast. So they used what they had identified as the village boxes. They had already had those boxes for the villages, and they said, what about if we let you go within those boxes? Otherwise, one of our other options would have been a Siri-like option, which is go anywhere in the country that has surplus federal property. Well, we don't want to own property in California or Virginia or wherever there might be surplus property. We wanted to own some of our homeland in the region. So we agreed to what was offered to us, and it was either a choice of that or a choice of nothing. And I don't find that to be much of a choice. So while we accepted it and now want to move outside those boxes, it's because the initial choice was not a very good one.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, we do have the support of the city and the Village Corporation in Cake. We have had regular discussions with Cake Tribal, and we continue to have that dialogue. We don't expect every tribe and every community to support us, but we've been very lucky to have many that do, but we respect that each tribe has its own decision to make and to decide what's best for their tribe and their community. I know that one of the reasons why the Cake Tribe is opposed is they would prefer that cultural sites go to the tribe. And we actually, as a corporation, would support tribal ownership of sites. But right now, there's no means to put land into tribal ownership that could be in trust to keep it protected. And we're the only ones right now with a native land entitlement or right. So right now there is no means to convey land to the tribes that would that they are entitled to or that could be in some protected status. And so while maybe down the road that could be an option where land could be put into trust for tribes, our board has talked about if that happened down the road, that we would convey some of our or all of our cultural sites to the tribes if that became an ability of them for them to protect the lands as trust lands so that they couldn't lose those properties in the future. We have the ability as a Native corporation to have our land with the land bank trust to make sure that they're not taxed, they're not, they can't be taken in a bankruptcy. So we have certain protections that we have as ANCSA landowners that we couldn't just, that a tribe couldn't just have right now under existing law. So I think that's a big part of why the Cake tribe is opposed to it. There might be other issues maybe around timber development or others, but you know we respect their right to make their own decision about supporting us or not.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable ladies and gentlemen, and Madam Mayor. Thank you all for coming. Myself, I am a shareholder of Sea Alaska and Sciatica. And as a shareholder, I approve of being able to move away from logging, to move away from timber, and to have lands in trust that are open to all people. I myself as a shareholder never want to see those lands cut off. And these people, these ones that we elect from the shareholders, they know when we're unhappy. We've told them when we're unhappy. And when they were all looking at each other, it's like, how do we keep this going? It's like, you have us amongst you, 1,500 shareholders. You can continue your dialogue with us and learn about us. And we will answer questions. And we will hold these people accountable. Gunachchish.
Gunachchish.
My name is Robert Chevalier. It's interesting that you have the support of CAKE, because what they told Senator Murkowski on March 9th of 2011 was that sacred sites should not be turned over to an ANCSA corporation. So my question, one of the things I've noticed too is Arctic Village has assumed control of their sacred sites, and it's a subject that is a pretty hot topic all around Alaska right now. Venati has done too, but they have a different structure. And what I see happening, I mean, I read this to somebody and they thought it was anti-Native. You know, and then I pointed out that this was written by the organized Village of Cake. So my question to you is, what is it about your structure or your behavior that seems to be the single most divisive force in the Native communities right now?
Well, I just want to clarify that I said the village corporation and the city support us, not the organized Village of Cake. So I know organized Village of Cake is not in support. That's my clarification. And
we need to clarify is the desire is not possible. No one yet has been able to convince the Forest Service that they should transfer land. I mean, we're having enough problems with it to transfer a sacred site to a tribal entity. They don't have, there's, as I described with you when they created the split estate, ANCSA created some very strange relationships. And it took, it could have been the kind of thing that caused natives to fight with each other and to tear each other apart. But what they really did is they sparred and they disagreed and they came together and a solution was reached. the same as with the sacred sites. We have a situation in which these really belong to the clans. These are the clan sites, but there's no mechanism for them to have absolute guarantee that they'll be protected. There's none. The Forest Service, in fact, has written a huge policy document. I encourage each of you to read it, and says, well, we will try to protect these sites as best we can when we have the money, and there's nothing perpetual about it. What we're doing in this bill is making these sites perpetually owned by Native people. Now, once they're owned by Native people, then the Native people need to sit down together and decide how to manage them. We are very close to signing a memorandum with the Organized Village of Kassan about managing sacred sites. We have talked with OVK, Organized Village of Cape, and as we move forward, I think that will be one of the focal points of our discussion with them. So what they're doing is basically saying, we're not happy with where we are. We gave them what we thought was a memorandum of understanding, and what you really found was we wrote it in a really structured way, and what we really needed was a memorandum that really captured the cultural aspects of this, trying to take a document that Native people talk to each other, and there's a lot of written words, or there's not a lot of written words, it's all dialogue. And now we're trying to put it into Western language and to make it perpetual. So we're working on the MOUs, and I can't say that we'll satisfy Organized Village of Cake. Organized Village of Kassan supports the bill. Sitka Tribe supports the bill, and they're strongly encouraging us to move forward with the MOUs. And we will be in those kind of dialogues. And we've tried those MOUs again and again, but I think we're finally looking at a document that now reflects the cultural values, what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you.
John Murray, live here in Sitka. I got a question about buffer strips. I'm sorry, I was at another meeting. If you already went through it, I could stand down and maybe the press will cover it later, or do you want to take it? Or?
Sure.
I mean, the State Timber Practices Act, the buffer strips are probably about as wide as this room. As a commercial fisherman, like many of your shareholders are, and many of us make a living subsistence-wise and commercial-wise, whatever else, that's not adequate. And I know you guys try to make a compromise. You do something for 5 years, and then why not perpetuate that into the future, which would be really healthy to all the communities. It would heal the fishing community. It would come a long way to healing the fishing community's concerns. So I was just wondering if that's any change in the legislation dealing with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I might clarify, is in the legislation, in the Senate bill, there's a requirement that there be a 100-foot buffer for a period of 5 years, during which time the expectation would be that the state would go back and review its forest practices. Right now, the Forest Practices Act establishes two buffers. There's a 100-foot wide buffer, which is what they call a slope stability buffer, and then there's a mandatory 66-foot timber retention buffer. So there's actually two buffers in the State Forest Practices Act. This act has been reviewed again and again, and has been amended at least four times to provide different kinds of stream protections. Sea Alaska, working with the Board of Forestry, EPA, others, we've been doing continuous monitoring on the Forest Practices Act for almost 15 years. We have more data collected than probably any other state in the nation. And, Madam Mayor, I mean, if this is an important issue, we'd actually like to come back and talk about buffers and talk about what our research is finding. And when I say our, it's peer-reviewed research. It's published in the Canadian journals, the fisheries journals. So we would offer to come back. The reason that we agreed to the five-year buffer is the land that we get under the land legislation will have a 100-foot buffer. our existing land will be under the state forest practices buffer. We're going, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if 100 foot is the right buffer, let's go back and let's review it. We've told people we're committed to reviewing it. We're not afraid of sitting down and looking at the Forest Practices Act and saying, does it need to be reviewed or, and amended based upon the science and the research that we've been able to do. And so that was our commitment, is we'll agree to 100-foot buffers for 5 years. That will give us plenty of time to go back and review all the forest practice standards, not just the stuff on the new land that's being conveyed, but on everything.
And that would be a good visit down the road, I think.
We'd be more than happy to come over.
Because fishing is just very key to our,
yes,
our folks. Anybody else? Please.
Assembly members, my name is Cynthia Pickering Christensen. I have fished at Readout every year for the last 25 years, except perhaps on the 3 years I was pregnant. I'm also an ANCSA lawyer. I ran the section of the Department of Justice which litigates ANCSA questions for 7 years, and then I was in private practice for about 20 years, during which time I represented Native corporations, as Rick knows. And, oh, I'm sorry, I'm an ANCSA lawyer, I've represented Native corporations, and I've represented the federal government for many years involved in these questions. You mentioned providing capital to communities in Southeast, and my response to that is Sea Alaska would be taking the capital of our community. The lands up and down the coast, which are listed as sacred sites in the past legislation, and Readout Bay, are the capital for our community. They're capital in the sense of subsistence sites. They're capital for our ecotourism business owners, for our charter fishermen. They're the capital that we use, and we want to hang on to those. The standards that would be used for the sacred sites, and indeed the standards that were used at Readout Bay, are not what one would think they would be for sacred sites. Rick specifically mentioned Necker Bay. I have walked to Necker Bay holding the description of the standards that Sea Alaska submitted to the committee to justify its being included as a sacred site. And what it says is there is a space under some trees in which there might have been potentially maybe some cabins, but there's no site, there's no impressions, there's nothing to indicate that there ever were cabins, and there's no oral history or oral testimony that that land was ever used by Native people. So that was, with all due respect, that is the amount of substantiation and documentation that is supporting some of these sacred sites.
Okay, you need to wrap this up, please.
Okay, I want to get to the questions of access, because if they're going to own them, then of course the people want to know about access. And in terms of Readout, ANCSA will control what kind of access can be granted. And the access would only be under 17B, which does not allow fishing. So it could only be at the grace of Sea Alaska. And they said that it would be protected, however, by restrictive covenants. But isn't it true, and this is a question for the council probably, that Sea Alaska has succeeded in the House Bill 1408 of stripping these restrictive covenants from all ANCSA historic sites.
Okay, please wrap it up. I mean, that's...
Yes.
That's
okay, and then access on sacred sites. I'm very proud that I've been part of the group that has asked Senator Murkowski to put easements for fishing on sacred sites. However, to date, there has not been satisfactory language, and with easements, the devil's in the details, that actually is going to protect fishing access. At this point, it's a nice hope, but it hasn't happened. Thank you.
We have a very thick binder with the proof of the cultural importance of every site. In fact, we have thousands of sites beyond those which we've identified in the legislation. So I'm not sure what site she's talking about. And just because there's no physical proof on a site now doesn't mean it doesn't have historical and cultural significance to our Native people. So I guess that's a response to one question. She did ask about House Bill 1408 and stripping of covenants. There are very restrictive covenants that currently go with 14H1 sites. These weren't imposed by statute. These were imposed administratively by agency. And we have asked that some of those, that those be removed and replaced with uses that allow the site to actually be used for cultural purposes, but obviously still would protect the sites from any harmful uses that would be in derogation of the purpose for which we selected the property, which is to protect a cultural or historic site. So saying we stripped them doesn't tell the whole story, because they're being replaced with other restrictions that allow for meaningful cultural use of the property, but still protect it from derogation, which is the legal term, of the cultural site. What are the other?
Subsistence.
And again, I'll reiterate, our intention is to allow continued subsistence fishing on the sites. There are some 17B limitations right now on 14H1 sites about no fishing. We think that's does not, our interpretation is it doesn't include subsistence fishing. And as I said before, we have tried to, in the legislation, remove what we think are overly restrictive uses of cultural sites. If a site is important because of its subsistence uses now and in the past, in the history of our native communities, then fishing shouldn't be one of those things that is prevented from occurring on that site.
This is one that everybody's in alignment. You know, believe it or not, is this, the subsistence is important at that site. The tribal member shareholders that have testified here have talked about subsistence. We sit down and we met with them earlier to give them an update on the land legislation, and it was all about subsistence, subsistence, subsistence. We're not going to do something that harms that subsistence right. We are going to make sure that that right is protected. And I mean, that is as strong a words as we can say. And I just don't know how else we say it any other way.
Okay, thank you. Next.